Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Folks, welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. We are talking today about an around the NFL segment that I want to start doing every week, especially in these times where Browns content alone is pretty dry. I think it's a wise idea to look around the league, sort of tie things that are going on around the league, I should say, to Cleveland. And I think a lot of the topics that have dropped over the last few days, really the last week or so, have tied nicely into Cleveland, whether that's play teams on their schedule, teams that are in division, whatever. We're going to look around that once a week, and we're going to do that with Browns Daily Mock, who is Stephen Thomas, who is my colleague at the OBR. So I do hope you guys enjoy. And then we have a fun little Browns topic at the end that I think is interesting when we continue to talk about how this roster is built, the age of some players, some of those things. So hopefully you guys do enjoy it today. Thanks for checking in. Let's get over to that interview right now. Welcoming into the show now, Mr. Stephen Thomas. How are you, sir?
Good to be here, my friend. Let's talk some ball.
Well, we're going to talk around the NFL. I think when you come on every week or so, or whenever you do, I'll try to fit in this segment of looking around the NFL. Just storylines that are happening throughout the week, previous week, or on this day, particularly when we're looking at today, and just how they kind of tie into the Browns. So I think a couple big player news wrinkles are out there as we hit mandatory minicamp and guys not showing. Some teams canceled mandatory minicamp altogether because their OTAs were productive enough. I think that that's what the Browns are deciding. Would we rather have you guys here for OTAs or would you rather be here for minicamp? I think some teams, San Francisco, could be forgetting one other team, backed out of minicamp altogether. Just, we're good. We did enough. We covered it. And Stephon Gilmore didn't show up. A guy we talked about, Steve, as a potential guy the Browns could look at trading for. He's not showing up. He's due $7 million. He's not showing up, trying to get something done with his contract. It's going to be tough for the Patriots to resolve. Do you think or have any inkling that the Browns might be poking around there? Do you think they feel set with seeing Greg Newsom now at OTAs and Greedy out there running around too?
I think it would the same thing we talked about back when this was, you know, the hot topic around Browns media. I think it all depends on the price. They did, as we discussed, you know, how many times over the course of the offseason leading up to the draft, they needed to address the cornerback room multiple times, and they did all that, but they do still have question marks. I mean, yes, Greedy looks good coming back, but until he gets out there and gets hit, we don't know, and we don't know what he is. We think Newsom was a great first round pick. We think he's got tremendous potential, but like all rookies, we don't know what he is until he gets out there. And beyond those two, Troy Hill and Denzel, there's not a lot of proven options if something goes wrong. So I haven't changed where I stand. Some of the things we heard, you know, a third and a fifth and then two players, I mean, that's ridiculous. No, they would not be interested at that range. But if it gets to the point where the Patriots are just like, just, you know, freaking take them off our hands and it's a day three pick, or, you know, maybe it's the end of camp and we were going to let go, one of the wide receivers or one of the defensive tackles because they have too many in those rooms right now, but they're rosterable players and there's a need and a fit over there and he agrees to come play on his current contract so they can get out of it next year, you know, that kind of stuff. Who wouldn't want to add a guy like Stephon Gilmore to your mix, especially when you're seriously chasing a Lombardi, or at least you think you are? So my view of it hasn't changed. I think it does, obviously it becomes a little more interesting now that he has not reported, especially if that continues. And if he doesn't report to regular camp, then it starts to get, you know, hey, let's at least keep our eye on it, something like that. But do I think they're going to go out and immediately make a big move and sign him to a giant contract? No, I don't think that.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious he's not going to play at the current price tag, which from what I gather is 7.5. They'd advanced him money last year on his contract and to make up a little bit of wiggle room for this offseason, which we all know the Patriots went out like crazy which is the anti-Patriots, and spent hundreds of million, I think $160 million in free agency, something like that. So he sees all these other people getting paid. He's not getting paid. He feels underappreciated. He was just the defensive player of the year a few years ago, what, 2019, I think. So it's hard to see him playing. It's hard to see the Patriots forking over a ton of money. It could get to the point where both sides just say, hey, we got to figure something out here. I don't know if that's Cleveland-based or not, but we like to try to give you a spin on it. I would think the Browns would at least pay attention to the price tag, whatever that price tag ends up being. Not saying they'll make that trade, but that is one that is of note. Another name that's of note is Danielle Hunter, who is back with Minnesota. He restructured his deal to give him a little bit more money up front this year. There will likely be a separation at the end of 2021, so he'll hit the free agency market in some capacity for 2022. Hard to say the Browns wouldn't at least pay attention to that one come 2022. You don't know what Jadeveon Clowney's going to do. You don't know what Tack McKinley's going to do. Both guys one-year deals. I mean, I certainly have my eye on him down the road. Would you agree?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, I think people saying, oh, well, you know, Tack and Clowney, they're both gone after this year, like counting it already that they're 1 year and done, I think that's premature. I think if I don't think they're going to be able to give both of them the money they deserve, but if we the Browns go out and have the year we all think they're capable of having, and the defensive line is one of the, you know, sword points of that winning season, then I think at least the possibility that one of them gets the money they want and likes the situation here. You know, hey, I can win here. I can get great stats because I'm across from Myles Garrett, and I can get a big bunch of money. I think the possibility certainly exists for it, for one of them to get a big deal, and in which case, you know, the Hunter is going to be off the table. But if both of them, you know, move on to greener pastures or don't work out or whatever, I think they, like you said, they will definitely at least pay attention. Now, he's got to prove that he's healthy. A neck, you know, surgery is no small thing. But if he comes back and he's healthy and he's the Hunter that he was for the last few years, why wouldn't you? I mean, imagine pairing him with Myles Garrett for a big 3-year contract, 4-year contract, whatever they would end up giving him. Who wouldn't want that? Sure, I would definitely pay attention. I think I saw Rapp said something it like the fifth day of next league year is the day they have to make the decision. So he wouldn't be a day one of free agency guy. But he would be somebody that, you know, we would all definitely argue about for all offseason for sure.
He's he's worth the interest if the Browns do decide that either of those 1-year guys didn't work out or whatever. It's a heck of a football player he's entering the tail end of the prime, but still well worth it at the rate he's going to pair up with Miles if you wanted to. We'll see. We all think they might draft a guy, but could have other positions of more interest at that point. A couple more interesting topics to discuss, and a stat thrown out from Nick Faribault today. This is off topic a little bit here, but the Steelers only ran 79 play action pass attempts last year, which I laughed at. They had 79 dropbacks, 77 attempts. I couldn't believe that was a real stat. That's like running, I mean, I don't know. That's like running 6 or 7 a game. I mean, it's mind blowing that they would run that few play action passes. For comparison's sake, the Chiefs ran 236 dropbacks. They were top in the league. The second closest team to them was the Saints. So they had 79 in Pittsburgh. The Saints at the 31st ranked team, 119. The Browns, for context, were they weren't as high as I think people thought they were. They were only 17th at 158. But imagine the Browns cutting their play-action pass attempts in half and a little bit less. It's kind of crazy to think about. It's the big reason I'm not that scared of Pittsburgh still. I did these previews, and Nick was great for Pittsburgh. It's like, I think you and I have discussed, and I think it was literally you and I on air that said, until Pittsburgh is down, I can't ever think of Pittsburgh as being bad until I see them not be good. But man, that number is alarming. That number is really alarming. And I don't even know if I'm expecting a response from you, Steve, but I just had to like laugh at that number. To be in modern NFL football and not be able to even hit the number 80 for attempted play action passes. I don't know. I would love to get, I know their offensive coordinator is fired, Matt Canada's in, but I would love to get an answer. Is that because they truly think Ben can't do any of that? Or was it just gross negligence, you know? It's crazy.
Well, I mean, according to, you know, the discussion, that we had on Twitter a few weeks ago, any quarterback that uses play action obviously sucks, right? I mean, it's a terrible crutch that Baker Mayfield had to use all that play action. I don't know if everybody listening remembers that brouhaha on Twitter from a few weeks ago, but it was ridiculous. But yeah, Nick is fantastic. He's one of my favorite follows and super informative if you want to keep up with the enemy. Yeah, that's an absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's not Dan Fouts. It's not an Air Coryell. It's not Marino in the mid 80s, you know, where there really was no point in even faking, you know, running play action because nobody would have bought it. This is the Steelers we're talking about, who, you know, as great as Roethlisberger has been for decades and decades and decades, their team has been vicious defense and a running game that can just bowl you over, you know. I don't know. I mean, they were unbelievably predictable. I think we all knew that. I don't think we knew it was to that extent.
What's crazy is that we were talking with Anthony Reinhart and Jack Duffin about this on Sunday's pod. I talked to him about how they should be throwing more. And the for me, it was, they're going to still run the ball on first down. They have two really good running backs. What's fascinating is they're 17th in attempts in that cluster of teams around the 150 mark. Yet their EPA on play action passes, 6th in the NFL. Positive play percentage on play action passes, 9th in the NFL. Points earned, 7th. So they don't do it a ton, but they're really good at it. So it's like, that's what's funny to me is the teams at the top of this thing with attempts, if you just look at totals, all these teams feel like they have to help out their fantastic quarterbacks. The top teams in this thing, top five, you ready? Chiefs, Bills, Rams, Bears, Wonk, Packers, Cardinals. All teams that have these quarterbacks who everyone loves, or in a scheme, the Rams everyone loves. You know, the Bears just were at a crossroads with a quarterback. It was terrible no matter what they did
right
for him. But yeah, it's just the laughable. That is the laughable narrative across the league. So had to touch on the Steelers. I would have to think that they really, really, really try to increase that. Do they think Ben's knees can handle that from under center? I doubt it. I don't think they think he can hold up doing that over 17 games. Maybe they do more from pistol or something like that. So a storyline to pay attention to. Another storyline to pay attention to is Sheldon Richardson. I know Lane Atkins has said here, our OBR insider, that he never really thought this was going to happen, that the ship had sailed. And he was right from the beginning in the Ask the Insider section was saying that it just doesn't feel like there's going to be any interest. Because if there was interest, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong here, if there was interest in doing anything to come back, he wouldn't have been allowed to hit the door. I think, I don't know, I can't say for certain if it was Cleveland that wasn't really putting an effort into restructuring, or maybe Sheldon was just like, I'm not coming off that number no matter what. I don't know, but if there was real, genuine, meet-me-in-the-middle interest from both sides, it would have been a restructure when and where the cut happened.
Right.
It's hard to envision a guy getting cut and then saying, oh, yeah, and I get it. He could have looked at the market. Maybe the market wasn't right, but at that point, it just kind of feels like the ship sails in a way.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the other thing, too, is look at all the resources they put into the interior of the defensive line. I mean, we haven't talked about it yet. I'm sure you and I will as we get closer to camp, but they're going to be cutting some rosterable players. I mean, they've got way too many options, you know, on the interior of the defensive line right now, and they only need 4 or maybe 5 of them to really work out, depending on how many they decide to keep. So the narrative, you know, Andrew Berry saying things like, well, yeah, the door's always open, or, you know, however he phrased it, that's what a GM does. I mean, yeah, if he's still unsigned in the middle of August and, you know, half of the guys they have on the IDL are not working out and they have a couple injuries, or, you know, yeah, then yeah, maybe it comes back. But it like you and I always say about certain things, you can't write it off, but it feels unlikely. That's how it always felt with Sheldon, because like you said, I mean, if in the NFL, if there's interest, like genuine interest on both sides, 99% of the time they find a way to get it done, and they didn't, and it was early that they didn't. So it just never felt realistic. And that's not to say Sheldon's still not a viable player and isn't going to go someplace, be in Minnesota or wherever, and contribute and be a good football player. But they just obviously didn't feel he was the right guy for this team at this point in their build. So, yeah, why would you let a guy walk for this long if there was a real chance, not just, yeah, there's a chance, a real actual chance that you wanted him back. It doesn't make any sense.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
It doesn't. And you think about, too, I just have a hard time with the Browns the way they went when Sheldon was moved on from the way they went out and got people. I do think there would have been some reason the Browns would have gone to the table and said, we can't do your figure, but we can do less.
Right.
And I have to think Sheldon walked away from that. I just can't see. If they wouldn't have spent any more resources, they drafted Tommy Togiai, they had signed, help me out, Malik Jackson, Andrew Billings was already there. They have enough. They feel okay. We don't need to sign anybody else there. Then I would have said maybe the Browns just cut him and there was nothing that he could do to make the Browns restart. But no, I think it's the other way around, where clearly the Browns wanted to try to maybe work a way to keep him. Otherwise, they're going to have to replace him with a bunch of bodies to try out and see what could happen. So that's just the way I lean. I didn't think a reunion was going to happen either. It seemed far-fetched, but I guess this closes the door. And if he goes to Minnesota, which the Browns will see this year, which is of note, they play them in week 4, I think. They go to Minnesota. Dalvin Tomlinson, Michael Pierce comes back. And if you add Sheldon Richardson, that's a pretty good group up front to challenge the Browns' run game. So that is of note. Another thing of note, Benjamin Albright, always kind of connected to the Browns in a way. Not always perfect, but he's a Denver guy. Does great radio stuff out there. Super nice dude. Has insider roots in Denver. Has had some in Cleveland over the years. Made note today on Cleveland Browns Daily that the Rodgers and Denver Broncos are like a 60-40 thing. He thinks it's a 60% chance he ends up in Denver, which is hugely noteworthy because anybody who follows the Broncos know that they're a quarterback away. That roster is really good. They need a quarterback. Drew Lock, Teddy Bridgewater don't strike fear in anybody. And if they can add somebody like Aaron Rodgers to Noah Fant and Jerry Jeudy. They got, help me out here, SMU Cortland Sutton. They got some guys, man. Like, they got some guys. They've bolstered their O-line a little bit better to the point that they're better. I think there's something really there. It's just adding the right quarterback. And obviously, wherever Aaron Rodgers goes, he's the right quarterback for almost everybody. What's noteworthy is, he's, no matter what, if between those two, he's going to be on the schedule somewhere. The Browns open their season with the Bears in week 2 at home. I should say they open their home schedule week 2 with the Bears. And then we're talking about Denver. I'm an idiot. The Browns host Denver for Monday Night Football, I believe, right? I think I'm right on that.
I don't have it in front of me. I think you're right, though.
I think they do host them. That's their only Monday Night Football game. And obviously they have Christmas Day with the Packers. So, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Denver. Just what you want is Denver with another great quarterback. Hate those.
Well,
guys.
And I can't remember exactly the package because he was on with Zagura and Nate. After he said that, of course, you know, Nate, like me, like at the same time, me listening and Nate on the air both went, whoa, you know, because, you know, that's the first I've heard that it's leaning that heavily that direction. He asked him, what would the trade package look like? And I don't remember exactly what he said. It was huge, but it was almost all draft picks. I think he only mentioned, like, you know, one starter player and then one other player or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but it was all draft picks. So when you and I talked about this, you know, way back when it first came out, we said, well, you know, yeah, Aaron Rodgers going to the Denver Broncos with the existing roster would be scary, but they're going to have to give up so much and this and that, and it won't be the same roster. It sounds like they're trying to work it out with just draft, or at least mostly draft picks. So, yeah, if you drop Aaron Rodgers and he plays anything like Aaron Rodgers into that roster, and then of course the other big domino that has to fall their way is Von Miller has to come back and be Von Miller, or at least Von Miller-esque. They're another team in the AFC. The AFC's friggin' stacked, and that they would be just another team in the AFC that I mean, you don't fear anyone, but you definitely have to respect, and won't be an easy out. So it'll be fascinating to see how that goes. How many times over the years have we heard big name quarterbacks with these kind of, you know, quote unquote drama things in the summer, and then it turns out to be nothing? This one, it just feels different. I can't put my finger on it. It feels like he genuinely wants to go someplace else. And I don't know that the Packers are going to be able to do anything about it at this point, you know? So I don't know. I hope he doesn't go to Denver. If they move him, I hope it's to the NFC. But it sounds like Denver's the leader at this point.
Didn't their owner say this weekend that Aaron Rodgers is an interesting fella or something like that?
So yeah,
I just don't know how they mend
it
that.
It sounds broken.
It sounds really broken. And I don't think many things in Aaron Rodgers' life go from broken to unbroken. It seems like when the bridge is done for him, it's done. And it's like, good luck, Green Bay. Good luck, because you're not going to ever find one quite like that guy again. So joke's on you. Anyway, we'll talk now really quickly. I wanted to touch on one Browns topic singularly focused. I saw a question today about, actually, I think it came from somebody in Denver, ironically enough, about which player on their roster, young player, are people just not talking about enough. I think we spend a lot of time on Brown's side of thing talking about the future. I did an episode yesterday with Cameron Justice, who's phenomenal, about the Browns' top five players under 25.
She's not great, isn't she?
She's right. So good. She's very sharp, very good, and just the nicest person. So, yeah, listen to that if you didn't yesterday. But I thought this was an interesting question because, again, we talk about these guys a lot, but there was one player in particular for me that I don't think it's talked about enough. So I'll let you go first, Steve, and see who you came up with and then throw you mine.
I decided to go with Kadarrell Hodge because I think the rest of the young players, I think we've talked them to death. I mean, that's the part of this equation. You know, it's not just, oh, pick a good young player that you think we should be talking about. This is Browns fans, man. Who do we not talk about? We talk every player to death. So I was looking at, you know, Grant Delpit or, you know, Greedy Williams. I mean, yeah, we've talked about them a ton. Even Jordan Elliott and Andrew Billings get talked about a ton. So I went with Kadarrell Hodge. I mean, maybe he's not going to be, you know, challenging Odell for the team lead in receptions or, you know, flashy plays or anything like that. But before he got hurt last year, I don't think a lot of people realize what a solid deep threat he was developing into. And he has some
kind of chemistry. He beat out Rashard Higgins. He literally beat him out.
He has the same kind of chemistry with Baker that Higgins does. That
I think so too.
You know, Coneheads from Miracle on Ice line. You know, we don't know. We don't know how. It just happens, you know. And he's faster than a lot of people gave him credit for. He's a special teams demon. He's bigger and stronger than a lot of people realize. I'm guilty of this. I think when he was signed, and I was guilty of this, he was just, you know, some body that they were bringing in to fill out special teams and maybe, you know, the sixth wide receiver or something like that. Before he got hurt, and again, I don't know if he's ever going to be an 80-catch guy. Or I mean, maybe, but I that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying he fills a role in this team, if he's healthy, that is critical. We've talked about it with Anthony Schwartz a lot, and obviously he's not as fast as Schwartz, but Hodge is pretty darn fast. He's a guy that can, you know, get deep and get open and open things up underneath for some other guys. So I that's who I went with. I went with Kadarrell Hodge. Partly because I really like the kid and I like his skill set and his size and his work ethic and everything else, but also partly because there's maybe two other guys, and I think you're going to pick one of these other guys, but everybody else we freaking over talk about. Who have we not talked about?
Well, I'll talk about Hodge, man. It's hard, Steve, because you think the Browns, they're not, unless it's a philosophical change, which there could be here. Offensive evolution is a key buzzword this offseason. Keeping six receivers when you only play two a majority of the game is really hard to envision. And it's like, it's just hard for me to think they're going to keep. And if you don't keep six, that leaves you with one of Donovan Peoples-Jones or Kadarius Hodge you have to get rid of. And it's like, I have a hard time letting Hodge go. Mina Kimes, huge fan of Kadarius Hodge because of how effective he was with the Rams in those preseason games she was covering live. And he has earned the respect he should have. You're right that he does not get the respect he should. He catches everything. I mean, some really great catches last year. That slow-mo of, I think it was it Philly? Or actually, it could have been Week 17. It was Week 17 when the Browns were trying to clinch. He's running a bender over the middle of the field.
Oh, the one behind him.
No, yeah, and Baker has to, I don't know, Baker just probably missed it. The passing window, he was late to let it go, so the window, it ends up coming through the window and it's behind him, and he just one hand sticks back and catches the football, everything away from his momentum to bring that football in, and it's just, he's good. He's very solid. He beat out, again, I'll say, I know I blurted it out when you were saying, he beat out Rashard Higgins, and I think Higgins, I think everybody could agree last year Higgins was just kind of ignored by this coaching staff. I don't know what happened with the Freddie Kitchens coaching staff and Higgins. There was a disconnect about how the player practiced or something. This year he's given a clean state with clean slate this 2020 season with what we think is a very, very open, understanding, willing to accept coaching staff, and he beat him out. So that tells you a lot of what you need to know about how they view him, and I think he might be somebody that is being just overlooked all the time because it's like you forget when something good is right in front of you sometimes. What can Donovan be? It's like the skit from Family Guy. It could be a boat, right? The gift. It's like you can have a boat, but you could have this box right here. Well, what's in the box? Right. Well, it could be a boat. So I just think that I always come back to that. So like he's good, man. He's good and he's more than good enough. And I know they just signed a receiver today that is a guy Stefanski had connections with from Minnesota in 2019. I have not studied a bunch of his tape. You probably obviously know more than I do is studying the fringe draft guys. And there's going to be huge competition in the wide receiver room. Huge. And I'm not talking about a receiver. I'll say Harrison Bryant. I think that we all talk about tight ends this offseason. It's been can Austin Hooper bounce back from what was an un-Austin Hooper-like season with the drops, some of his issues. He doesn't have the field space he normally does because Jarvis kind of operates right in his general territory. I think that played into it, but he's got to have a better year. It's a thing that people are talking about. In mid-season, surgery never helps your season in general, but he's got to have a bounce back year. He's talked about a lot. Could he be a guy they move on from after next year because his contract's pretty big and he reaches those voidable years? The guy we spend the most time talking about is still amazingly 24 years old, David Njoku, for all the right reasons because he could still be the future of the tight end room. He could be a second contract guy. That could still happen for him. He could get more opportunities and justifiably so. But then you have this kid, Harrison Bryant, who I thought faded late in the year. I think he had a couple fumble issues in games that really started to give him nervousness. Sometimes it's like running backs, man. When you fumble, you can go 500 carries without fumbling. Then you fumble once, and you fumble like five times out of nowhere. It's like the Zeke Elliott thing we saw last year. It's just a weird mental thing, and I think he dealt with it. He fumbled once, and then he fumbled twice, and he fumbled against Oakland, and then he fumbled against somebody else where I think the Browns actually recovered it, or maybe they didn't. I can't remember totally, but I thought that played a big mental thing with him. But I thought when he got opportunities, he had four touchdowns, I believe. He made plays off play action. He's never going to be this George Kittle-like tight end, but from a position that we know is really hard for young guys to come in and be productive players in both phases, I was really impressed with Harrison Bryant, and I think we can think too much about who's going to be the lead of the room. Who's going to be the lead of the room? Will they keep David? Oh, yeah, they have this young, good tight end, too, who could just really keep getting better. And I think he will keep getting better. And I think there's an opportunity by the time the next few years end that we're looking back and they're like, well, Harrison Bryant is the future of that position. I think he's a very good football player.
I'm with you. I think he's got a chance to step in and make their decision on guys like Hooper a little easier. If he comes in and has the year that you think he can have, and I think he's capable of having as well, then next year, if they're making a contract decision on Hooper, obviously having another option in-house ready to go makes it easier to move on if that's the direction that they want to go. Now he goes out and flops, and Njoku makes it clear he wants to leave, and then Hooper has all leverage, and they got to keep him, regardless, basically, of what kind of year he has. Now, I think he's going to come back and be Austin Hooper again, but you know, that's just the situation that you're in. Talking about these two guys, it led me to a question. I want to ask you this question. And let me preface it by saying this. This coaching staff, one of the things that has impressed me and given me peace of mind is they go with what's working. They mm-hmm. adjust mm-hmm. to their not only their personnel, but to the matchups that week, to who's hot, to, you know, whatever. There appears to be no ego in the play calling. God damn it, we're going to run this and we're going to make it work. And so I wonder, and I genuinely wonder, and I want your opinion on this, all the multiple tight end stuff, the thing you said about that you only usually use two wide receivers, how much of that was just due to circumstance last year with Beckham being gone and losing Hodge for a bit and JoJo Natson going to all the injuries and everything that we had. With them coming back with assuming a healthy Odell, Jarvis, Rashard, Kadarrell Hodge, Anthony Schwartz, Donovan Peoples-Jones. I mean, look at the guys that probably aren't even going to make the roster. JoJo Natson, Derek Willis, Jamarcus Bradley, Ryan Switzer, Alexander Holland. These are guys that are going to get snaps somewhere in this league this year, probably not here. With a room like that, will they go back to more 3-4, potentially 5 wide receiver sets because that's could potentially be the strength? Or do you think Stefanski's a multiple tight end guy will, you know, be the lead thing and they won't stray away from that? How much of that grouping and personnel usage last year do you think was that's Stefanski and that's just who he is, or that's the situation they were in, that's what was working, that's what they had to do to win games?
It's a lame answer, but I think a little bit of both. I think he was most comfortable with that from Minnesota when he played Rudolph and Irv Smith all the time. And mm-hmm. he had two really receivers he truly trusted in Diggs and Thielen, and he didn't really feel the need to change that up. Now you come to Cleveland, and I think their third and fourth wide receivers, now even the fifth wide receiver in Cleveland, are far superior to anything you could find in Minnesota. So when they talk about that offensive evolution, what Stefanski keeps bringing up, and he's brought it up sometimes unrequested. It's just been something he has said. That's why I think play action passing could go up, first down passing could go up, and more 11 personnel is a result that can be a byproduct of wanting to do more of those things. And I think you're right. I think part of it is that's what he knew. That's what he trusted for Minnesota. I think as the year wore on, everybody could see that he wanted to do more things from the shotgun. He wanted to do more things to mess with defenses, personnel manipulation. And he became more comfortable getting out of the box of things we thought he would be. And I think the play action numbers we referenced earlier are pretty indicative of, oh, they were only 17th in play action passes. I thought they would have been higher. And their play action bootlegs were significantly fewer than I thought they were going to be. And all year long, I talked about the lack of screens. They did not run anywhere near the number of screen plays that he ran in Minnesota. So, and it's not like the Browns can't move. I mean, you know, we saw them be wildly productive on screen plays. They closed out the wild card game with a beautifully done screen play. So those are things I think will increase. I think you're probably going to see a little bit more balance in personnel, not so tight end heavy, but still effectively using those tight ends and creating mismatches, and maybe even more wide receiver going 11 personnel, but bunching them up, getting them close to the line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. running snug mm-hmm. formations, stuff like that. Especially if you can get Anthony Schwartz in snug formations and run him on fly sweeps, that's a thing of beauty, man. So I expect some of that stuff to happen. They have a much deeper understanding of their personnel, their quarterback, their wide receiver room, what they do well, and have a good feel for their tight ends now, too. So I think it's easy to say the Browns could be a regression team offensively, but I see just a number of ways in which they can become even more effective. And mm-hmm. You give Kevin Stefanski a full offseason with this and almost literally zero change in personnel.
Right.
It's going to be fun. It's got a lot of potential to be really fun. So expect him to stick to some of the things he's always done. Expect the wide zone to still be heavily focused. But there will be stretches in games, and there will be stretches in portions of the season where they're like, when we watch it, and we're like, oh, that looks different than what we're totally accustomed to seeing. So that's an exciting element for sure.
Yeah, and I've just, you know, in my own, you know, not nearly as detailed way as you, I've been imagining Anthony Schwartz in, you know, those bunch formations, and then they manipulate the coverage in a way that he somehow ends up with a linebacker on him. And then they run the other guys deep, and he drags across the field. So Baker's now got an easy, you know, 6-8 yard crossing route, very easy throw, but he's two steps open, and then he turns it into a 40-yard play. It's, you know, it's what we've said a few times. You don't have to throw the ball 40 yards in the air to get a 40-yard passing play. And Anthony Schwartz, with speed like that and some of the creative ways that guys like him can be given the ball in the short areas especially, I'm really excited about that. But, I mean, yeah, I wonder how much of that we're going to see because, I mean, for crying out loud, Derek Willis is a long shot to make the roster, and I love that guy's skill set. So it just seems to me, like I said at the top of this question, with a staff that appears to be egoless and will do, you know, when they say, hey, whatever it takes to win, they actually mean it. And it looks, sounds like they got a roster or a locker room full of guys that have bought into that. I have a hard time seeing them not going at least more to the 3 and 4 wide sets. The personnel just almost dictates it at this point.
It'd be really fun if they got comfortable. You know, you want your team to find out who they are and stick to it, be who they are and never change. But it'd be really cool to see them get comfortable bouncing between 10, 11, and 12 personnel just all the time. And that's why I still think Andy Janovich might be a surprise cut. I just would not be surprised by that at all, especially the way they use less and less of the fullback in later portions of the season. But if they could bounce between 10, 11, 12, and 13 personnel on any given drive, on any given play, and make defenses have to match that personnel all the time, that's hugely advantageous. And it would be crazy to watch teams try to match that personnel. And I think they can do it. One of the unique teams that can really do it with a bunch of different players at wide receiver with varying skill sets and obviously three tight ends who can be very effective. And I still think Steven Carlson's more than fine. He had a touchdown in that I think it was 2019's Myles Garrett helmet game. He made that catch in the back of the end zone that I loved. I'm like, I think that guy can play a little bit. So college wide receiver, all that stuff. So there's a ton of fun elements to this offense, which we'll really get a feel for and talk about more as training camp gets close, and then watching them live in training camp, what that looks like. We'll be covering that at the OBR. So Steve, this is fun, man. Again, 20 minutes is the plan, 34 minutes deep. Here we are, the usual, we can't shut up. We are who we thought we were, is the saying for us. So this was fun, buddy. Appreciate you.
Anytime, man. And then, you know, like I said, I'm sure we're going to talk every single person on this roster to death between now and September. But, man, this is going to be a fun year. I can't wait.
Can't wait, man. Can't wait. Thanks again. All righty, that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us today. Not much else to talk about other than I'd love it if you could give a subscribe to our YouTube channel, the OBR's YouTube channel, and then also download this one by subscribing to this podcast. Daily download will be there waiting for you however you do get your podcast. Would appreciate that. And a review would also be nice as well. So thanks, guys. I really genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate you listening to this podcast. The numbers, again, continue to be great, and I cannot thank you enough. I hope you have a great day, and until we talk next time, as usual, go Browns.